This is Long Shots, VSiN's premier golf betting podcast. Here's Matt Brown, Wes Reynolds, and Kelly Bidlin.
Hello, and welcome to Long Shots, golf betting podcast here on the VSiN Podcast Network. Matt Brown, Wes Reynolds, Kelly Bidlin coming to you for the Travelers Edition. This is a no-cut event, so we will have everybody playing four rounds, everybody making money this week. We'll see not only the plays in our account, but what guys barely missed the card and all the stuff that we had to put into the models that we valued this week. But guys, I don't want to spend too much time reviewing last week because every single talk show on the face of the planet has spent the last 48 hours talking about what happened at the U.S. Open, but I feel we should give it at least a little bit of oxygen and then we can move on from there. As everybody knows, we get to the 15th hole on Sunday. Rory McIlroy is up by two strokes. He ends up losing the tournament to Bryson DeChambeau after DeChambeau makes an unbelievably ridiculous bunker shot that, I mean, seriously, that happens one out of 25 times. I mean, it just happened to happen at the very best time for him, and he goes on, makes the putt, and wins the tournament. Wes, everything's going to be talked, you know, every single angle has been talked through here from Rory McIlroy. I know you had an outright, really kind of blows that didn't get home for you and all of that. And like, I kind of look at this and say, he was already bucking the trend, right? If you make 496 straight putts at 3 foot or less, like that's just all you're already running on the right side of variance. You were eventually going to miss one of these. And then it just happened to happen in the worst possible time. Obviously that influences the putt on 18 as well, but you know, listen, we're bettors. We don't always have to bet Rory McIlroy in the outright market. And so with that, you look at a guy that has been very, very consistent and tons of top 10 finishes. And if you played him in head to heads, you probably won every single one of them and all this. So, you know, from a betting aspect, I mean, from a human aspect, I feel horrible for him, but from a betting aspect, there are ways to make money off of Rory without just, I mean, everyone looks at it and be like, oh, the guy can't win. Okay. The guy can't win. We never can bet this guy. It's like, you can make money off of these guys without having to have outright tickets.
Yeah. And look, he wins pretty consistently still, just doesn't do it in a major championship, as now that drought's about to extend to 10 years, unless he can go ahead and stop it at Royal Troon next month. And look, I think three things can be true here. Yeah, I think Rory McIlroy did choke it away when you miss a 2.5 foot par putt and then you miss a putt inside of 4 feet on 18. You know, probably a questionable club decision on the 18th to take driver when he took 3 wood all 3 days and was pretty successful at doing that. So that's one thing that can be true. And then a couple other things can be true. Did Bryson DeChambeau get some breaks on some of those lies in the final round as he was pretty wayward off the tee? I think he was second to last in the field, only hit 6 of 14 fairways. Yes. And then also a third thing can be true is that Bryson DeChambeau did win the U.S. Open as well. Rory lost it and Bryson won it because you hit that 50, you know, that wasn't a greenside bunker. It's 55 yards away, and to not get stiff to inside of 4 feet, even Bryson was saying, I maybe am able to get up and down there 5 out of 100 times. And that was one of the 5 that we saw on Sunday. So look, and DeChambeau, it wasn't like, you know, he backdoored his way in, even with the circumstances. He was still right there in contention, was the 54 hole leader, had a 3-shot lead going into Sunday. So he was a deserved U.S. Open champion. And I think Rory McIlroy could have been too, but, you know, just at the inopportune time, missed 2 putts that he is going to make almost every single time.
Yeah, Kelly, when we take a look at all of this and how it all broke down, the course played pretty tough. I mean, I know whenever we expected it to play tough, we were sitting here wondering just how tough it would play when it was all said and done. We only ended up with 11 guys that were at even par or better. We only ended up with 7 guys that were at under par. And you start to see, yes, did Bryson run pure on Sunday? Absolutely, he ran pure on Sunday. But we saw all the talk that we did about the wire grass and all this stuff, and like, if you watched a lot of this tournament, which obviously we all did, it wasn't as penal as I thought it was going to be. Like, most of these guys were able to play out of that. There were a few guys here and there that, yes, had to punch out sideways or because it was just absolutely terrible, or had to just kind of chunk it out of there because it was absolutely terrible. But there was a lot of space between the wire grass and all the things. So it was really just the greens and the around the green game that made this so incredibly hard for these dudes. I think that the course played a bit unfair at times, and I know that golf purists out there are like, yeah, well, that's just U.S. Open conditions. Listen, I'm all for getting punished for bad shots, and I think you should get maximum punishment. I do not like dudes getting punished for good shots, and I saw a ton of very good shots where guys did not get rewarded, and that bothers me because it's hard enough as it is anyway with the way that the greens are shaped and all that stuff, but for them to be absolutely not receptive at all in some of these situations made it a little tough for me. I'm not complaining completely about the course. I'm just saying in future, you know, for the future, you got to reward good shots. It can't just be where you hit an awesome shot in there and you still, you know, you're still going to bogey, double bogey holes and stuff like that. But again, Bryson at 6 under, Rory at 5 under, you get Finau, Cantlay at 4 under. Probably should mention that Cantlay probably could have won this thing if he'd have made his putter failed him.
Totally could have won.
He made nothing on Sunday and hit great irons all day.
Yeah, his putter failed him something fierce. And I wonder if we're going to see a different putter in his bag like come this week, because golly, you just don't see that guy miss 5 and 6 footers like he was missing. Pavone at 3 under, Hideki Matsuyama at 2 under, Henley and Schauffele at 1 under. And that is the extent of your under par players for this past week.
Yeah, I think overall, I thought it was a great tournament, great course. I think what you're talking about with the greens is fair. There were definitely a few times where you're like, I don't know what that guy is supposed to do there besides put it exactly where he tried to put it in and then sail it over. I think that stuff was more fun when you were watching the guys with the around the green play. It's cool to see when you've got a chip that should be relatively easy that if you miss it by a foot one way or the other, it's either going to be setting you up for a great look at par or it's rolling right back down to your feet. I think that part's great. I think it's more the, you know, 125, 150 yard approach shots that these guys are putting dead on where it's like, all right, and that just rolling off the green. And now they got all sorts of hell to deal with. I think the off the tee stuff was, it was great. The wire grass, like, I don't know. I thought that was awesome. We kind of knew going into it that there was going to be some randomness with that you were going to have some lies that, hey, this isn't all that bad. And to your point, I think even more than maybe a little bit more so than I expected. But then, yeah, there was going to be sometimes you were behind some crap that you just couldn't deal with at all. But I thought it was a good mix up from what we're normally seeing at courses, even in a U.S. Open rotation. And I think the biggest surprise just statistically from looking back at things was, you know, distance off the tee seemed to matter, at least with the guys who were off at the top of the leaderboard. And I didn't factor that in nearly as much as maybe I should have heading into the tournament, because there were some long hitters at the top of the leaderboard at the end when it was all said and done.
Yeah. Look, we're going to, if we're everybody that's a family here with us on this program knows, you know, if we're going to be transparent about everything, giant loser of a tournament for me this week. And I found my new pet peeve when it comes to golf. It's my guys that I had placement market bets on making the cut and then blowing up on the weekend. That is now my new pet peeve, as I had multiple placement market bets on Dean Burmester, who goes out and just goes 76-74 on the weekend. Matt Fitzpatrick goes 79 on Saturday. Sepp Straka goes 78-72 on the weekend. All these guys where I had top 40s, top 30s, things like that, that just absolutely blew up on the weekend. I had the over 33.5 on Cam Smith. He finishes T32. It's just like everything that could be wrong for me went wrong for me. It felt like this week, Colin Morikawa top 10, T14, like just a lot of stuff for me that it was pretty close, but just not quite there. So bad tournament for me this week. Even my addition of Tony Finau cost me some extra money because he didn't get it done either. So it was pretty brutal for me all in all. But hey, that's why we have this week, and golf continues to roll on and we can try to make some money back this week as well as we head to the Travelers Championship. This is a no-cut event, as we mentioned. So everybody's going to play 4 rounds. It's at TPC River Highlands over in Connecticut. We all know the Keegs got it done last year. Everybody loved it. The fans loved it. Hometown-ish guy up there for this one. So it was awesome to see the Keegs win this. Honestly, a guy that rated out pretty well in the models for me this week as well. I don't know if I will end up on him in some way, shape, or form, but I just wanted to throw that in there as we get going. Guys, if you haven't already become a VEASAN Pro subscriber, we have a promo code. It's golf, G-O-L-F, if you want to come in and get involved.
G-O-L-F. Got G-O-L-F. It again. I'm so proud of you.
If you want to come in, we're going to give you 13 months for the price of 12, $199, VEASAN.com/subscribe, promo code golf, G-O-L-F. Wes, as always, people can head to VEASAN.com if they want to see your preview of all of this. But let's get a brief little rundown here of what we're looking at TPC River Highlands.
Yeah, TPC River Highlands, one of the shorter courses on tour. I believe the third shortest this year, par 70, 68-35, just about 12 miles south of Harford. This event has been around for about a little over 70 years. Is a Pete Dye design, 1984, and then it's been renovated a couple times. Pretty tight in terms of the fairways, about 30 yards on average. Wind is really the main defense here. You can score on this course. Bradley, 23 under, is the winner last year, but usually it's going to be mid to high teens. 5 water holes, about 69 bunkers. The rough is pretty thick. The fairways and rough, bent POA with the Kentucky bent and fescue mix in terms of the 4-inch rough that you have here. 5,000 square feet greens, 5th smallest on tour. It's going to be about average on the stip meter, 12 feet. So, not super fast greens. Really in a prototype here that has won here. You've seen shorter hitters win here, and you've seen bombers win here over the past several years. So, there's that drivable par 4 on the 15th, which is like the ultimate risk reward hole where you're going to see guys make eagles and you're going to see guys make doubles. So like I was saying, in terms of guys that are a little bit bigger hitters off the tee, we've seen the Dustin Johnsons win here. We've seen the Bubba Watson won here 3 times, but you've also seen, the Ken Dukes and the Kevin Streelmans and the Ches Reavies win here as well. So no real prototype in terms of a player, but this is a very popular event. I think it's the second most attended event that's a regular PGA Tour stop other than the Phoenix Open. So probably should be a big crowd at the Travelers. 71 players in this field with Rory McIlroy's withdrawal. So, signature event right after a major. I don't know how much I like that personally, just as a fan and also as a bettor. I don't like these being so condensed. I don't like the fact that they had the Memorial the week before the U.S. Open, and then they have this event. I wish they would spread these out a little bit more for next year's schedule.
I think the one before the major has grown on me. I kind of like that. It's kind of like the undercard to like a big like prize fight sort of thing. Like, but the one right after the major, I think we got to shift these around. I don't like that at all. Wes, I know we had some holes that I know they switched around even from last year. How much of that do you think we should be factoring in? I'm trying to, I know it's 6 holes that they did some construction on. I think that's leaving me with more questions than answers, I think, heading into this event, as we've seen some of the guys try to cut some corners and stuff here the past few years.
Yeah, look, there have been at least a few changes here, but I don't think that they're that big. I think the layout is relatively the same. The length is relatively the same. So, they narrowed the fairway on number one a little bit. Smaller green on the 11th rather. So they've changed that a little bit. Narrowed the fairway at one, narrowed the fairway on the par 5-6. So there's a few little changes here, but I don't think it's going to really change very much, to be honest with you.
Okay.
Yeah. The one thing I would say here, just, again, with the course and being one of the shorter courses, it does neutralize a little bit of the off the tee. I'm not going to say that I didn't factor in off the tee stuff, 'cause I did, but we're going to see a lot of guys kind of in the same vicinity, because the landing areas here, if you're trying to make sure to stay out of distance, there's going to be a lot of less than driver type stuff. And whenever we see all of that, most guys, not all guys, but most guys hit it about the same length whenever we're talking about like kind of laying up type of stuff. And so something we can factor in, but 6,800 yard course, 290 average yards driving distance. That's just, that's everybody on tour can do that. So
yeah, third week in a row, I'll speak for myself, at least third week in a row, I'm emphasizing accuracy over distance. Even though what I just said about US Open, maybe I did that wrong, but still there's 3 weeks in a row that I am approaching this with the same kind of outlook from off the tee. Cause that is, I mean, those are some, you talked about the wind west, but I mean, those rough, so you gotta stay out of. I mean, when you're seeing on the card, four inches plus, it's like, oh, okay. So 4 inches and maybe longer. Got it. Gotta stay out of that.
And they're stick rough around the greens too, actually. So, you know, you don't get as many of those tight lies because you're kind of chunking out a really thick rough if you miss these smaller greens here. So, yeah, look, there are some danger here. I mean, it's not, I think, an overly difficult course, but I don't think it's going to be as easy maybe as it was last year.
Yeah, my guess would be we're looking at maybe two or three strokes worse for the winner, but there's still going to be some scoring out there in my personal opinion in this
15
one.
15 right. Underwinded?
Maybe more.
Okay.
Maybe 17, something like that is my guess, but we'll see. I haven't been right about much lately, so we'll figure that out. Looking at the odds board here, we're actually getting a discount on Scottie Scheffler in a smaller field event with a course that should be easier to score on.
Yeah, that stuck out to me.
Yeah, go figure on that one. He was three to one or plus 280 by the time it went off for the U.S. Open. He's plus 360 now. He played about as bad as he could possibly play, and he still made the cut. So that is something to take into account here. Plus 360 on Scottie Scheffler, 750 on Xander. 12-1 on Morikawa, 12-1 on Ludvig. A guy that actually didn't get penalized and he didn't make the cut is Victor Hovland. Again, odds board a little weird today. Misses the cut at the U.S. Open. He's 18-1, shorter than Patrick Cantlay, who came out and, as we said, could have won this tournament. So 20-1 on Cantlay, 22 on Hideki, 25 on Russell Henley, 28 on Finau, Fleetwood, Burns. Then we get into the 30 range where you'll find the guys like Thegala, Straka, Connors, etc. Tom Kim, Sung J.M., Justin Thomas, Jordan Spieth, Brian Harman, a whole slew of those guys at 40-1. Kelly, I think I kind of got ahead of myself here because I was going to ask you what really stood out on the odds board. I think I spoiled it whenever I said a couple of those things right there. But if anything outside of those two things, because to me, I'm sitting here going, okay, we're getting a discount from Scottie Scheffler on a shortened field, which he gets four rounds and it's an easier course. Also, we're seeing Victor Hovland get a lot of love in the betting market after missing the cut, where Patrick Cantlay, much more proven golfer over the long term than Victor Hovland, doesn't get all of the love that coming off a tournament. And like I said, had his putter worked on Sunday, he'd have won that tournament. The putter just didn't work for him at all on Sunday. And he ends up having to settle there for the T3. But anything else stand out to you?
And I guess I would say just everybody else then kind of longer than Cantlay, just being as scrunched up as close to him as they are. I mean, for numbers that we've been seeing on Hideki and that I've been betting off in the past, you know, six, 8 weeks, to see him 22-1 when Cantlay's 20-1, a lot of those guys almost feel too short then on the back end, but I'm with you. So the Victor Hovland and Cantlay pricing being a little odd. So, I would kind of say all that. Obviously, you've got to readjust thinking for the 71 man field, but still, some of those guys, I feel like you should be getting longer numbers on when you start to look beyond where Cantlay's at. I don't know. I can't. For as heavy we went in on Scheffler last week, I might just need to do it again. There's a 4-1. They're 4-1 at MGM here in town. I mean, he was still, what, top six tee to green for the entire tournament? Just the putter was a complete nightmare. Get him out of there. Let's get him in a new setting. I might end up on Scheffler. I haven't made many outright bets yet, to be honest.
Yeah, just interesting, Wes. We kind of look, and there's a big – and I'm not saying that we can't have a bomb win this tournament. That's not what I'm saying, but – there's a kind of a big odds fall off, right? Like, we kind of get to that middle range where you see some of these dudes that are good players but just aren't playing well. And then after that, it just kind of falls off of a cliff as far as the odds go. And I'm looking at some of these guys where it's like, I know it's tempting in a shorter field and you see these big numbers attached to their name, but you just look at their form, you just look at what's going on with them, all of this stuff. And it's kind of like, I don't know. I try to be early on some guys and try to be early on some turn, but most of these guys, I'm sitting here looking, you know, your Zalatorises and your Cam Smiths and your Max Homas, who I've bet probably more than anybody in this world, right? And you see all these giant numbers attached to their name, but God bless, they have been so incredibly bad lately that I guess I'm just going to be willing to miss out. If they hit it a bomb number and I'm not on it, then I guess so be it. But there is nothing to lead me in the direction of a lot of these dudes with big numbers attached to them.
Yeah, and if you look at recent years with this field, now it's, of course, a signature event, so the field's even smaller. I know Bradley was as high as 90-1 last year when he hit, but it was kind of a logical winner here. He had been runner-up on this course before, so it was a logical winner. He's from the New England area, from Vermont originally, so, you know, this is kind of as close to a hometown event as you get. But if you look in recent years, even before this was a signature event, because this was moved after the U.S. Open, a lot of times too, it, you know, U.S. Open's in the Northeast, so it's an easy trip for players, and the sponsors, travelers and the like have been, you know, making it more enticing for players to come to this event. So you've seen a lot, I don't want to say chalky, but Xander Schauffele was 20-1 in 2022. Harris English was 35-1 in 2021. DJ was 30-1 in 2020. So you've seen some shorter to medium price players win here. The bombs really haven't won here, I don't think, since the early 2010s when Kevin Streelman and Ken Duke were 150. Mark Leishman was 125-1. So yeah, it's hard for me to think that there's like a big bomb. Maybe there's a mid-range guy that can win here, but it's hard for me to believe that there's going to be a big bomb, because the fatigue of playing all these signature events and then a major and then another signature event, it not only affects the top of the board, it affects everybody else as well.
Absolutely. Guys, when we come back, we'll go through the stuff that's in our models this week, what spit out and what we ended up putting in our betting cards. Welcome back. Long Shots here on the VSiN Podcast Network. Matt, Wes, and Kelly coming to you. So give you what's going into the models this week on a course that we think will be scoreable. Maybe not as scoreable in the last couple of years, but we still think, even with the changes, these are guys that are going to be able to go after this course so long as they can keep it out of the long grass. Kelly, I'll start with you here on this one. What did you ended up kind of prioritizing this week? And is there anything you de-emphasized as to, you know, like that you feel like maybe you're going against the grain a little bit?
Let's see. I mean, you know, off the tee did factor that in, as I said earlier, definitely looking at more accuracy this week than distance. And then, you know, a lot of approach stats. This is, you know, we got smaller greens, shorter course in general, looking for guys that, you know, keep it clean in the fairway, and then you're going to put it close on the green, ideally. I do think you need to factor in some around the green play and scrambling, though, a little bit this week. As Wes talked about earlier, you get some longer stuff around the green that these guys are going to have to play out of. And, you know, putting emphasized more than, you know, I would say I normally do for a tournament, but we've seen, you know, guys who win in the past here, it's usually keeping it pretty clean on the on approach and gaining with the putter pretty big time. So nothing I would say too against the grain for me this week. Maybe looking at a little bit more around the green than I would have thought going in, but not huge adjustments from past models that I've run on this one. I did de-emphasize though distance from what I had in the past this week. So really just looking for that accuracy off the tee, clean approach play, and some quality putters.
Wes, anything that you feel like you did a little bit differently this week?
Well, look, I did approach, and I think you have to do this on kind of a course with some tight fairways, and some of the fairways, in fact, have been narrowed, like we were mentioning earlier. There's a couple of those around the course. So I did some approach. I did proximity 125 to 150 and 150 to 175. You're going to get a lot of wedges here and a lot of very short irons, but mostly wedges here going into the greens. I did birdie or better, but I did more par four birdie or better, because there are 12 of the 18 holes are par fours here of various lengths. So I used a little general birdie or better, and then a little bit more on the par four birdie or better side. Strokes gained around the green, like Kelly mentioned, because not only the thicker rough, but these are smaller greens in general. So I think strokes gained around the green going to be important here. In terms of the putting, now this is a bent POA mix, and it's about 80-20 bent grass. So if you're going to do putting, I think you want to side more on the bent grass side, because not all POA, of course, we've talked about this before, especially on the West Coast, is created equal. It's a lot more bumpy out there, especially in the California courses. In the Northeast, it's less bumpy, a little smoother, and a lot more benign. So a little bit of strokes gained putting bent grass here, I think, could be used for context. And then you could go a couple different ways with the driving stuff. You can go with good drives gained. I went with a little bit of total driving. I don't think distance is overly important. It never hurts here necessarily, but I basically just went with total driving. I kept it a little bit more simple here this week. And then I looked at for context, at strokes gained on Pete Dye courses.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the greens, Wes, because that was all the different greens we've seen recently with these guys having to play through too. I just took basic strokes gained putting. That's really all I looked at for that this week. I understand what you're talking about though. You do have a mix here though that does go a little bit more towards the bent.
So, in my journey to always try and figure things out and try to get better at all of this, and I'm not saying that this is going to work for me this week, but I do want to point out to everybody how I went about it a little bit different this week. So I didn't do like past X amount of rounds in this. So I went back to the week after the Masters and I just put in a date range. So basically, because the Masters played so weird with that weather and the wind and all the stuff, and that could really skew some stats and all that. So I started the date range on April the 16th. And so I just started from April the 16th until present day with that. And so I excluded the Masters because, again, it was just super wonky the way that weather played out and the way the course played there. And so I just went with everyone's stats post Masters up until now. Not saying that's the right way to go about it. It's the way I'm trying to tweak things here. Model hasn't really worked for me the last few weeks. And so I'm trying to tweak things to see if maybe there's some stuff that was just skewed. If I'm doing, you know, last 36 rounds, if four rounds are like really heavily altered because of, you know, the way that things went down, I don't know. I'm just trying to zig where maybe other people are zagging in this little bit. So that's just how I went about the modeling this week. So our models might not align this week like they do typically sometimes with some of the stuff that we're putting in. I did put in a decent amount of the same stuff you guys did, but like I said, I just did a date range as opposed to last X amount of rounds. And so we'll see if that changed anything. What that does do is it shortens some of the guys like in this model down to as few as five tournaments, depending on if they took weeks off or different things and stuff like that. Of course, and then other guys up to like 7, 8 tournaments, 9 tournaments, stuff like that. So it does shorten the sample size for some dudes and get a pretty normal sample size for other guys. Just disclaimer there whenever I'm reading off my model stuff. Again, not saying I'm right, just telling you where I'm coming from.
Yeah, probably worth bringing up, though. I guess at this time of the year and where we're at in the season, I'm mainly looking last 8, 24 rounds anyways. So there's not many guys out there that are going too far, you know, when you're looking at that range. I mean, yeah, when you start getting up into the 20s, I guess we're hitting the Masters, but most of my stuff, I'm kind of looking for shorter range than that anyways.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I think, you know, there is a default where a lot of people look last 36 rounds. Some people look like last 50 rounds. And for me, I don't know. I don't know if that's telling the full story right now with all this, the way this golf season has gone to, how wonky it was towards the beginning as well. So, yeah. Just shorten it up. We'll see how that all plays out in all of this. Okay, so Wes, let's start with you, and let's start talking about some of these plays, what the model spit out, and then what ended up on your betting card this week.
Yeah, you mentioned one earlier, Patrick Cantlay, 20-1. Typically a guy that has a good showing in a major, I don't want to necessarily play the next week, but I don't know if that's the case here with Cantlay. Third on approach, Bessie's hit his irons in a while, just couldn't make a putt on Sunday. He's never finished lower than 15th in his last 6 starts here. Fourth was his best finish. We know he's pretty good on Pete Dye's, has a very good history on these designs, always up near the top in terms of stroke gain total on Pete Dye. So Patrick Cantlay, I'm worried might be popular this week, but 20-1 on Patrick Cantlay. I think maybe last week gave him some momentum because he played mm-hmm. pretty darn well. I know he wasn't right there at the end, but he played pretty darn well, I think. And that was, by the way, his best finish he ever had in a major. Third, that was like the first time I think, in a long time. I think he's only had one other time where he was really like kind of in the mix where it's like, hey, I can see him winning this major. It's not necessarily like a backdoor top 10 finish or something like that. So Patrick Cantlay 20-1. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, Wes, the thing about Cantlay too this week for me, and he's going to make my card in some way, shape, or form. But like you said, like, so it's way easier for me to forgive a putting performance than it is like all the other stuff. Like, that's the stuff we really kind of latch onto and really, really want to see. Right. So as you're talking about, like, seeing his irons get back to what we used to remember Patrick Cantlay's irons, seeing him hit a decent amount of fairways, seeing all of the stuff where his game over the last 6 weeks, 8 weeks had just kind of fallen apart. It seems like he figured something out, and I can forgive missing some putts. I mean, putting's weird. It's wonky. It's tricky sometimes. But all the other stats are the stuff that I really like to see. And Cantlay, obviously a proven stud who just kind of fell off the wagon there for, you know, 6-8 weeks. And I think that, you know, he probably figured something out in the lab and is probably back to the Cantlay that we're used to seeing.
Yeah. Look, I certainly hope so. And I think that, you know, this is also a place where I think this was his first professional event in the early 2010s, where he was an amateur here and shot 60 when he was still playing at UCLA. So at least maybe some good past feelings for Cantlay. And he's always had solid form here. Hideki Matsuyama, 30-1. Comes into the week, 2 straight top 10, 6th at the U.S. Open, 8th at the Memorial. He was on the periphery of being in the mix, just never could quite get over the hump. 3rd last week in scrambling and strokes gained around the green. I think the irons, which weren't bad, but he was missing greens. But if you look on approach, I think he was top 10 in the field on strokes gained approach, but just missed too many greens, but just scrambled so well that he was able to score and kind of be in that top 5 to top 10 all week. So Matsuyama, 30-1. Corey Connors, who you can get anywhere from 35 or 40-1, top 10 at the U.S. Open last week, ended up T9. That got him into the Olympic Games, by the way. That got announced earlier on Tuesday. The 60 players that are going to be battling for the gold over there at Le Golf National in Paris. And Corey Connors is going to be one of them. He went past Adam Hadwin, so it's he and Nick Taylor that are going to be the two Canadian representatives. Top 10 in Hartford here last year. Shorter course that puts a premium on good approach shots, I think, is right up Corey Connors' alley. If ever there's places he's going to win, it could be here. 4th over the last 36 rounds on Pete Dye Designs, only behind Scheffler and Schauffele, and then one other one that I will mention a little bit later, who's a very much a specialist here. So Corey Connors, I got him 39 at circa, but 35-40-1 range. And then that course specialist I was mentioning was Brian Harman at 45-1, who was T21 at the U.S. Open last week, top 10 for putting. If you look at his finishes here, he was runner up here last year and then 8th and then 5th over the last 3 years. Plus, he has 3 other top 8 finishes here dating back to 2015. Going to defend that Claret Jug next month over at Royal Troon. Think he could win here. This, by the way, if you really want to look at history, and I know, you know, you got to always put that into context and not look too far back, but left-handers have done pretty well here. Bubba Watson won 3 times here. Phil Mickelson won twice here. So, you know, Harman, I think, could kind of take maybe those different angles that those guys have taken and benefit here. And he's certainly been a very good player here over the years. So Brian Harman, 45-1. And then lastly, because I didn't go all that far down the board, Tom Kim, 50-1, who's made 9 straight cuts, 4th at the RBC up in Canada 2 weeks ago, 2nd best score on the weekend, T26 at the U.S. Open, but probably deserved a better finish. Just had a bad round on Sunday, a couple bad holes, shot 76. He was top 10 after 3 rounds. I think the form is starting to get better. His irons are starting to get better, and maybe he could pop this week if the guys on the top of the odds board, if maybe Scheffler doesn't have a great week or Schauffele or one of the real chalky guys, Tom Kim, I think, might have a little bit of value in the mid-range at 50-1.
Tom Kim also on my card this week. Anytime we get to short courses that driving distance isn't a priority, I'm always going to take a look at Tom Kim, see where he's at, and see if there's anything that I like about him that week. You kind of go back and you start to look. We forget this dude's only 21 years old, right? I mean, like, there is a lot of improvement still to be made with Tom Kim. He fell into a slump. Yes, he did. That's why I said, if you like, kind of go and you start a little bit after the Masters, because he was horrible at the Valero. He's bad at the Masters. You kind of go in whatever. Now you start to shorten it up a little bit. Had a good PGA, had a good Charles Schwab, had a good RBC Canadian, had a good Memorial. He putted like ass at the Memorial, but outside of that, you know, played pretty well. And then you go into the U.S. Open, in which he put together some good numbers across the board. Really there. I mean, he loses a little bit off the tee, but again, it's a course that did benefit from being, you know, longer, and he's just not one of those guys. So I really did like Tom. I like Tom Kim a lot in this one. If we're looking at one of the things that we really, really value, right? I mean, ball striking at a course where you don't have to be long. He has gained ball striking his last five tournaments out there. And not only has he gained ball striking his last five tournaments, the least amount that he's gained is 2.3 strokes, all the way as high as 6.7 strokes ball striking in the last five tournaments that he's played. So like me some Tom Kim as well. Kelly, what's on your card, my friend?
Well, you guys are frustrating me, because Tom Kim, I definitely thought I was going to be betting entering this week. The putter kind of has me confused. You know, a guy that we usually see putt pretty well, and he's kind of been up and down with that. I hear you guys are both on. He might be talking me into betting him. He was one, because he was somebody I really thought I was going to bet this week. But both you guys on, might be joining you. And you know, going back to just kind of the earlier with your question about what really stuck out on the odds board, Harman does. Harman's got, I haven't got to yet, Wes, but yeah, 40-1. You're seeing over at DraftKings right now with a guy who's played this course so well in the past. I think what I'm going to be doing, I'm trying to figure out how to approach outrights this week, because that Scheffler price really can't, I'm having trouble getting past right now with what we talked about, where he was at last week, and I'm seeing a 4-1 on him. I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to organize, because I think Harman has me interested. Tom Kim, I don't know. I don't think I'm going to end up betting. Harman, though, at a long number, has me interested in, I'm interested in him. Keegan and Matsuyama at this point, like, those are just might be FOMO plays for me, honestly. Like, that is both those guys, I can't imagine winning and me not being on them after I've bet Keegan, what, 3 weeks straight. I'm not going to bet him where he's actually won before. And Matsuyama just, speaking to your point, Wes, I mean, the guy's just been playing better and better. And the back's still a little concerning to me, but those guys have all got in the mix, but you got to be careful, obviously, if you're talking playing Scheffler at a 4-1 number, how many more guys am I really going to add in an outright market? So all those guys I'm considering right now, I would say the other outright that I'm kind of considering is Russell Henley. Hasn't been gaining a ton off the tee, but man, the accuracy has been solid. Last 12 rounds, seventh in good drives, gained third in fairways. T19 twice here in his last two starts. So he's played well at this course as well. Four top 20 finishes, last seven events, every one of those events I'm talking about, either elevated or a major. So he's been pretty impressed. I'm definitely going to play a top 20 on Russell Henley, but might make my outright card as well. The guys I've bet so far, I went right back to top 10 on Xander and Colin Morikawa. I'm not going to quit on Xander. It keeps getting it home, even though it was close last week at the U.S. Open. I'll be honest, doesn't rate out as high for me this week as he has in recent weeks, just a little bit further down where he's been. It's really been Scheffler or Schauffele 1-2 for me the past three weeks, probably running numbers. Schauffele, he's, either somewhere in between that 2 to 4 or 5 range of what I'm looking at right now. Did bet a top 10 on him, though. Bet a top 10 on Colin Morikawa as well. I know Morikawa has not had great history here, but I think everything that you're looking for in course fit with his game, it fits well. You're looking for accuracy off the tee. He's been great off the tee in that range. Approach numbers are looking awesome. And, you know, when we're talking about birdie or better and stuff like that, he rates out very well there. Second in that category, or first in that category in the last 12 rounds, Colin Morikawa is. So he was actually top beat out Scheffler in my last 12 round model. So I'm gonna go back to Morikawa. I played him in the top 10. Another guy I considered an outright on, but I think I might just go Scheffler in the outrights and then a couple of the bombs and stick to that. So bigger top 10 bets again for me on Morikawa and Scheffler in the top 10 market. And then I am going top 20s. Russell Henley, I already mentioned. I'm kind of terrified at how highly rated Corey Connors rated out for me, Wes. Mm-hmm. That is I think I've learned my lesson enough that I'm not going to go to the outright market on him, but you're getting plus money on a top 20 on Corey Connors. I think that's going to be a pretty big bet for me this week. Really like where his game's at right now.
Connors third overall in my model this week.
There was one that I ran too, Matt, where he was third overall. That is it's kind of scary.
third overall in the model for me this week.
And a T9 finish here last year too, so has a little bit of the course history that you're looking for. I think it's going to be a pretty big top 20 bet for me. And then one guy might be crossing off the list because neither of you mentioned is Sepp Straka. I know
Sepp Straka fourth overall in the model for me this week, and Sepp Straka is on my card. I just haven't gotten him there yet. Yes,
oh, okay. I'm sorry. Yeah. I think I'm going to play him top 20. This was, I think that weekend is a little scary to me of what he's coming off US Open. And you're talking, you know, he's had some mixed results here. He's had three, like last 5 years, he's had T38 and T10 and then three missed cuts. But you know, you take away the US Open and take away PGA, it's five top 20 finishes dating back to the Masters. So I think I'm going to play him in the top 20 mark and then look at him in matchups. So as you guys can tell, it's a lot of the same for me, I guess, with Xander and Colin Morikawa in the top 10s, but then top 20s on Henley, Connors, and Sepp Straka, I think I'm going to do there. And then the outright market, I think it is good. I think I'm going to play Scheffler. I'm going to play Scheffler at 4-1. And then maybe a Keegan longer bomb and maybe a Harmon longer bomb in the outrights. It's kind of a weird week for me because usually you're like, Wes, you always start with outrights and kind of go the other way. I kind of do everything at once. This feels like a week where I'm actually betting the finishing position and matchups before I even consider outrights because that Scheffler number keeps screwing my head.
Yeah, So Sepp Straka and Tom Kim are essentially the same person. Whenever you look at like the way that they model out for me and the rankings across the board and all of the stuff and the stuff that they do well, anytime I'm putting a heavy emphasis on good drive percentage, driving accuracy, proximity to the fairway, all those things like that, you're going to see Tom Kim, you're going to see Sepp Straka like up there with stuff like that. And so those dudes up there for me, I'm going to have placement market bets on Straka. I don't know about the win equity for him, but I'm going to have placement market bets on him for this one.
I mean, last 24 rounds, Matt, he is first in good drives. Sepp Straka is first in good drives and second in fairways.
Yeah. You look at this one that I put together, you mentioned Russell Henley, sixth overall. And it's a guy that I'm just going to pound into the placement market stuff. Again, I don't know about the win equity on these dudes, but I'm going to continue. Look, it failed me last week going heavy into the placement market stuff. I'm going to hope, guaranteed all four rounds this week. And you look at some of these guys that can kind of backdoor their way. If you get all four rounds guaranteed, you can kind of backdoor your way into a top 20, top 30, top 40, depending on what market you want to play some of these guys in, specifically on a course that's maybe gettable. All of these guys, given the right conditions on a course that's gettable, can put together that 5-under, 6-under, 7-under round if things run pure for them. And so I'm a little bit more apt to do that, the placement market stuff in a tournament like this, and come back around on it. So Russell Henley for me in the placement market as well. Siwoo Kim, not that I have to tell you guys, but again, it goes into the short courses, iron play, like Pete whatever all the things that you like about all this with Siwoo Kim eighth overall in this model for me this week. And again, this is just stuff where I'm taking everything post Masters, I'm putting in what these guys look at from all of those stats that we mentioned, that we talked about, that we like. Eighth overall for Siwoo, going with him in the placement market again this week as well. As far as outrights go, I already mentioned Tom Kim. Hideki's going to make the card for me. Ludwig's going to make the card for me. I know it's a short number on Ludwig, but I saw something last week in him that leads me to believe that it's the time now is actually here.
He deserved a better finish last week.
Yeah. The only thing, and the reason I wrote about it on VSiN.com, where I didn't think he was going to be able to get it done last week, was because his around the green game was so bad at a course where you could not have a bad around the green game, and his putting was just was through the roof the first two rounds, and that's just not sustainable. And sure enough, it came back around to bite him, and it fell off over the weekend, but it's not going to be near as penal here. And the thing is he's just horrible off tight lies. You go in and you start to look and you see where his game really falls apart. he has no confidence hitting off of tight lies and all this stuff. If he misses greens at this one, like we just talked about, he's not going to be hitting out of that. He's going to be hitting off of more fluffy stuff and all that. And so I'm less concerned about the deficiency there for Ludwig than I've been really in a long time. So go ahead and go in on him, and then everyone can get your chuckle in now. But I'm going to catch Sam Burns before he wins and the number is chopped in half again. Because if you guys go in, if I said, hey, where did Sam Burns finish in the U.S. Open this past week? Y'all wouldn't know because they didn't show a single shot of him
this past week.
Yeah, you know what? He was T9. He was a top 10 at the U.S. Open this week. Like, the guy went out and had the worst five holes you could possibly have to start a tournament and then just turned it around and played absolutely ridiculous after that. He had two different rounds of 67 at the U.S. Open this past week. And if you go and you look at Sam Burns' profile, he had a miserable stretch. But Sam Burns is like the streakiest golfer there is, like, on the face of the planet. His season so far. So, guys, if we go back, like, let's go back to the Amex, right? Which is basically the first tournament we kind of start looking at when we say the season. T6, 10th, T3, T10. Then he goes on this, Sam Burns fell into a hole stretch of T30, T45, cut, T44. Oh, Sam Burns in May started to figure something out. T13, T10, T15, and then T9 this past week. And so he's a streaky golfer. He's incredibly frustrating to bet. It's the reason you really only bet him in outrights, because he's likely to be right there or he's going to be way off, like one of the two. But I think we're catching him on the upswing. He's gained tee to green in five straight tournaments. He's gaining off the tee. He's gained off the tee in five of the last six, which is the one thing we really get concerned about with Burns, because he sprays it so often, but seems like he's figured something out off the tee as well with him. So again, a pretty big number next to his name, considering where he's at with his game right now and how I think he's coming around. So I'm going to catch Burns before he wins again, and we have to worry about that number being too short. But
the around the green stuff's impressive. They're impressive numbers for him.
He was second in scrambling last week.
Wow. Yeah. It's just a guy that I'm going to catch before again. I'm going to catch before he wins again and get a good number on him. I will mention three other guys that were high up in the model. I'm not going to play them. I will say I don't have them in anything right now. Ben Griffin was 12th overall in my model. So I got to do some more digging on him and see if there's anything, maybe like a three ball. I talked to Kelly about this because he and I had dinner over this past weekend. I went in, and sometimes those three balls are actually fairly exploitable. Like, if you really like a guy and he's paired up against two guys you really don't like, then sometimes the three balls are really good. It's kind of the only thing that kept this week from being an absolute just kick in the groin, because
Wes, you crushed in those a couple weeks ago, right? You brought that up as well a few weeks back, I think. You might have been out of town actually, Matt, but I think you guys are right. Both of you talking about that has made me look at those more, when frankly we've hit the point in golf betting where there's so many markets like posted. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'll be honest, I don't know that I look through everything and consider every option like I should be. And you guys got me looking more at those three balls.
Well, the thing for me this week is the three of them that I won were the three guys that I just talked about that were ass on the weekend, but the two guys they were paired against missed the cut. Yeah. So like, I didn't even, it was a no sweat, right? Like my guys were horrible over the weekend, but it didn't matter because the other two guys they were up against missed the cut. So anyway, Ben Griffin is a guy I would just say maybe want to look at a little bit further. A guy that is way, way down the odds board, but was 25th in my model, and this is another one to dig into. Seamus Power was 25th in my model, but Seamus Power is literally like 200-1 or something to win this tournament. So I'm going to figure out if there's anything there with him, which I thought was pretty interesting, because I would not have expected to see Seamus Power's name as I scrolled really at all on all of this. And then, you know, again, anytime we factor in a lot of iron play and all other things, I don't know if we want to go there again. He's probably lit more money on fire for us than we care to admit.
But, I'm good. I already Tom know where Hoagie. You're going. Yep. Yeah, nope. Yeah, nope. Yeah, I'm good. I'm good, yeah. Matt.
Tom Hoagie is 13th actually overall in this model. Yeah, I know. He's lit more. He is that Tom Hoagie owes There's a lot of guys we owe drinks when they come to Vegas. I think Tom Hoagie owes us some drinks when he comes right. when he comes to Vegas. Like, that guy has destroyed my bankroll for sure. But anyway, those are three guys who were just at least interesting to me that showed up in the model. I don't have a play on him quite yet. I don't know if there will be something that presents itself, but if you're, you know, maybe if you're listening to this and you play DFS or something, you know, like, these are all guys you can kind of round out a lineup with too, because they're cheap and you can get them into a DFS lineup and maybe make something that didn't quite there. Wes, who was like a guy or two that was fresh off your card who just didn't quite make it?
Yeah, when I was looking a little bit downward on the board this week, a couple guys, JT Poston, actually, who was mentioned here a little bit earlier. Okay. I did consider, I'll probably have him for like a top 30 or something like that. In terms of up the board, I did consider Ludwig, and I do think Ludwig's probably going to win very shortly. I was very impressed with him. He had that triple bogey on Saturday, and then I was like, okay, he's out of it now. And when sometimes that happens with a young player, momentum gets going the wrong way. So he was a guy that I considered on the shorter end. Mentioned a little bit on the longer end. Did mention JT Poston. Also was looking at Sepp Straka a little bit in the mid range. Probably am going to do placements, I'm guessing, with him for the most part this week. The placements have been going well, actually, in these signature events. So those are a couple guys at least I was looking at. But man, it is so hard for me to go down the board, I think, really, with the long shot here. It is very difficult, even though they've hit here in the past. I think somebody, and it might not be on the short side, but it might be a little bit in the second or third level, like the mid range here, where somebody gets home. Chris Kirk, by the way, another one too, that was high up there in a lot of categories for me.
Yeah, there's I'm just looking over JT Poston's results, because I was betting him heavy in the beginning of the season. I think I've discovered a trend with JT Poston. He hates the springtime. Sucks in the springtime. Is that what it is? You got to get him early in the year or the summer. He heats up in a bit, I guess. Past few weeks, yeah, it have been pretty good for him. He really didn't pop for me too much this week, but obviously you got a reaction from that name. I guess there's a couple guys that, okay, like, I played Tommy Fleetwood top 20 last week. He snuck into that. And won a bet for me, and I feel like I'm kind of ignoring him this week. But didn't spike as highly as I guess I was expecting. I think he's another guy I was expecting him and Tom Kim to spike a little bit more than they did for me in my numbers. And then one guy that I feel like I'm probably just being insulting to a little bit, just completely ignoring him again this week, is Tony Finau. I mean, I guess when we describe this course and what we're looking for in player profile, he isn't exactly the prototypical guy that you think of, but for where his odds are at and where he's coming up in my models, it says that I should be betting something on him. But I do think I'm passing on him this week.
Yeah, the only other person, and I've got to really dig into the head-to-heads and the three balls and stuff, but, and I hate to say this because this is a guy that I owe money to. I mean, I owe drinks whenever he comes to town, but man, something's off of Max Homa right now. Something is real bad on Homa. And like, I think we might be able to exploit that in some matchups and three balls, which I hate to do that. It makes me feel dirty, but I think that this is maybe the time to go in and take advantage of that, unfortunately. So
I think I've narrowed down my outright card, by the way. I think I'm going Scheffler. I'm going Scheffler at 4-1, or maybe I can even find longer. I don't know. I just saw him jump out at 4-1 at one book in town. I'm going to go Scheffler, and then Matsuyama, Keegan, Harmon. I'm riding with you on Harmon, Wes. I never get Brian Harmon right. I rarely ever bet the guy, but boy, does that number feel long this week.
Yeah, like this is the place where you would consider him to win just going forward. And, you know, Harmon is a guy that was kind of a journeyman PGA Tour player, won a couple times and then won the Open. That's his career achievement. I don't think it's all of a sudden going to be the floodgates open for Brian Harmon to win all the time, but this seems like a really good spot for him.
Yeah, I love my top 20s and top 10s this week. I don't know about my outright card, but I think that's what I'm doing with it.
When it's all said and done, Scotty's going to go out and win by five strokes, and we're going to go, that makes sense.
I can't do it.
We're literally just going to be like, oh yeah. I mean, he had one bad tournament. And we forgot that he's like ungodly. Like, yeah.
Odds adjustment. I can't not play him this week. I can't not play him. I'll be the guy this week. I'm loading up.
Yeah, I like it, guys. Of course, every one of the picks you can find over on VSiN.com/picks page. If you're not already a VSiN Pro subscriber, promo code golf GOLF will give you 13 months. For the price of 12 for Wes, for Kelly, I'm Matt. Good luck on all your travelers' bets.